Ja, das nicht. Ja, ne? Kann das Mensch ja so.
So today, Tibetan Medicine Medical Association, Doctors Association, have requested this initiation of the Medicine Buddha. So perhaps you may be thinking that your skill in treating people would be become better and greater. After having studied medicine, traditional Tibetan medicine, of course, just by reciting the medicine Buddha mantra will not make you better in treating people. So the most important thing is to study Tibetan medicine, medical system. And so in our exile, we have a special opportunity to meet with other people from other medical traditions and have discussions. And so we need to seize this opportunity to make further development in the Tibetan medical system. Of course, we have a very profound system of medicine. So one of the best medical systems we could say. So this medicine, the medical system, Tibetan medical system, during the 8th century, during King Tibetan King Tisung Detsen's time, there was a kind of a meeting, a conference, international conference, presided over by the king himself. And then, therefore, we have this a synthesis kind of a system of medicine with us. And so today, in this 21st century, we need to use our own experiences and make improvements over whatever we have. So by seizing the opportunity that we are presented with in exile. So even from the Dharma point of view, we have the daily practices in order to which are meant for making inner transformation and make progress within. And we should not feel contented with what we have, but we need to make further progress. So you have requested this Medicine Buddha initiation in connection with your Tsuramaya. You're having a meeting conference these days. So whatever teachings or Dharma discourses we engage in, first of all, I say praise. We say this praise of the Buddha, as we usually do. And then within Buddhism, there are the Pali and Sanskrit traditions. So the later, the followers of the later tradition, the Sanskrit tradition, say the Heart Sutra, and so we will say the Heart Sutra as well. And then, with the being a follower of the Nalanda tradition, where we say that study the Prajaparamita Sutras, and the essence of which is contained in Abhisamaya Alankara by Maitreya, which shows how to progress along the path to Buddhahood. And there is in the Heart Sutra, there is this mantra, which means that from this time where we are, our mind is right now in ordinary state, and we should make progress further and further, go along the path and become enlightened. Therefore, the Abhisamaya Alamkara, the ornament of clear realization, shows these the progression along the path very clearly. So we'll see the verse of salutation from this text, and then explicit content of the Prajaparamita Sutras, the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, is emptiness, and which is explicated mainly by Master Nagarjuna. So we'll also see this verses of salutation of Mula Madhyamaka Karika by him, by Master Nagarjuna. And then there is a tea and bread which are going to be distributed. We should see when we need to do. And so while we engage in the prayers, we should also, while we say that these prayers, we should also, we'll also be taking bread and tea. So, of course, merely by thinking, you will not be able to fulfill our hunger and thirst. So we need food as well. To the founder, the endowed transcendent destroyer, the one gone beyond, the full destroyer, the fully perfect, completely perfected, fully awakened being, perfect in knowledge and in good conduct, Sugata, knower of the world, supreme guide of human beings to be tamed, teacher of gods and humans, to you, the completely and fully awakened one, the Bhagavan, the glorious conqueror, the subduer of the Shakya clan, from the Shakya clan, I prostrate, make offerings, and I go for refuge. So this is said three times. To the founder teacher, the Bhagavan, the Tathagata, Arahat, Samyak Sambuddha, perfect in knowledge and in good conduct, Sugata, knower of the world, supreme guide of human beings to be tamed, teacher of gods and humans, to you, the completely and fully awakened one, the endowed transcendent destroyer, the glorious conqueror, the subduer of from the Shakya clan, I prostrate, make offerings, and go for refuge. When, O supreme amongst humans, you were in Actions, perform only perfect virtuous actions, subdue your mind thoroughly. This is the teaching of the Buddha. A star, a visual aberration, a flame of a lamp, an illusion, a drop of dew, or a bubble, a dream, a flash of lightning, a cloud, see conditioned things such as such. So let's see first the blessing for the tea, the grace for tea and bread. Jukye yuen den samye kyab, samye yendu, samye kyab, samye kyab la teche. Nambara mimba samye kyab, namda shingda chupa. Through these merits, may sentient beings attain the rank of all-seeing, subdue the foe of faults, and be delivered from samsara's ocean, perturbed by the waves of aging, sickness, and death. Should we take tea first or bread first? So perhaps you should start eating the bread.
gezüldü.
He's always telling the people serving tea to serve tea for the general public, to everybody now. Gözü Marro, mi bagar. Heart Sutra, frustration to the IS Triple Gem. Thus did I hear at one time the Bhagwan was dwelling on a mass of Vulture Mountain in Rajgriha together with a great community of monks and a great community of bodhisattvas. At that time the Bhagwan was absorbed in the concentration on the categories of phenomena called profound perception. Also at that time the Bodhisattva, the great being, our noble Avalokiteshvara, looked upon the very practice of the perfect, profound perfection of wisdom and beheld those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Thus, then through the power of the Buddha, the Venerable Shariputra said this to the Bodhisattva, the great being, noble Avalokiteshvara, how should a son of the lineage train who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom? He said that, and the Bodhisattva, the great being, Noble Avalokiteshvara, said this to the Venerable Sharadotiputra. Shariputra, any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom should look upon it like this to correctly and repeatedly beholding those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Form is empty, emptiness is form, emptiness is not other than form, form also is not other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, likewise, all phenomena are empty, without characteristic, unproduced, unceased, stainless, not without stain, not deficient, not fulfilled. Shariputra, therefore, in emptiness there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no compositional factors, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visual form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomena. Phenomenon, there is no eye element, and so on up to, and including no mind element, and no mental consciousness element. There is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so on up to, and including no suffering, no aging and death, no extinction of aging and death. Similarly, there is no suffering, origination, cessation, and path. There is no exalted wisdom, no attainment, and also no non-attainment. Shariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, bodhisattvas rely on and dwell in the perfection of wisdom, the mind without obscuration. and without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reach the end point of nirvana. All the Buddhas who dwell in the three times also manifestly completely awakened to unsurpassable, perfect, complete enlightenment in reliance on the perfection of wisdom. Therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of the great knowledge, the unsurpassed mantra, the mantra equal to the unequaled, the mantra that thoroughly pacifies all suffering, should be known as truth since it is not false. The mantra of the perfection of wisdom is declared. Shariputra, Deyatha Om Gadegate Paragate Parasangade Bodhisvaha. Shariputra, the Bodhisattva, the great being, should train in the profound perfection of wisdom like that. Then the Bhagavan arose from that concentration and commended the Bodhisattva, the great being, Noble Avalokiteshvara, saying, well said, son of the lineage, it is like that, it is like that. One should practice the profound perfection of wisdom, just as you have indicated. Even the Tathagatas rejoice. The Bhagavan, having thus spoken, the Venerable Sharadotiputra, the Bodhisattva, the great being, Noble Avalokiteshvara, those surrounding in their entirety, along with the world of gods, humans, Asuras, and Gandharvas, were overjoyed and highly praised that spoken by the Bhagavan. Jirisi wangjuta tamjeda dembe korotetata adamita lama yinda tisarjim jikden yirang de jomdene yasumal mumbanu inyendu jiwa zunan gunje nige nishe jenze ganye na dhala gamba jama manje nige jiden duno.
I prostrate the mother of all the Buddhas and of the hearers and who through the knowledge of path causes those helping migrators to achieve the aims of the world and through the possession of which the subduers set forth the varieties having all aspects. Next is the salutation verses from Mula Madhyamaka Karika by Aryanagarjuna. I prostrate the perfect Buddha, the best of teachers who taught that whatever is dependently arisen is unceasing, unborn, not annihilated, impermanent, not coming, not going, without distinction, without identity, and free from conceptual constructions, and peaceful. So it seems that I may not have received the actual full-fledged initiation of Medicine Buddha, but I have received the blessing of Medicine Buddha, which is contained in Rinjung Gyatso, the compilation of different blessings, initiations from Tata Rinpoche in my childhood. Then I have received the visionary teachings and initiations of the fifth Dalai Lama as well from him. So the initiation that I'm doing today is the So in whatever practice of Tantra you do, it has to be done within the meditation on emptiness, and from within the emptiness you arise into a deity, and then do the rest of the practices for blessings and so forth. So earlier when I came here, I went through the preparatory ritual where I have imagined or visualized myself in transforming into Buddha, Medicine Buddha. And so you can imagine me as Medicine Buddha. And then on the altar, where there is a heap of tsampa, you can imagine the Medicine Buddha. So we can say the mandala offering in request for that initiation.
So I pray that sentient beings without exception may be liberated by the sound of the great Dharma drum. Please stay to teach the path to enlightenment for inconceivable millions of years. I pray that sentient beings without exception may be liberated by the sound of the great Dharma drum. Please stay to teach the path to enlightenment for inconceivable millions of eons. This ground anointed with perfumes, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. I pray the sentient beings, without exception, may be liberated by the sound of the great Dharma drum. Please stay to teach the path to enlightenment for inconceivable millions of eons.
Did you only say song, Yajin?
So, whether we do a long Dharma discourse or a short one, we need to have a correct motivation, a perfect and pure motivation on the part of the teacher also. He should give the teachings with pure motivation and without being stained by the eight worldly concerns. And without looking for fame and name and so forth. Today, it seems that many of the Dharma centers are looking to make money. So many of the lamas seem to be doing Dharma business as well. I don't remember the name, but there was one good lama. The lama was Zelenato Rangdrel. He had said, He had made three promises or commitments. So usually people, when they travel in Tibet, they use horses. And he promised, made the commitment not to use horses when traveling, and sticking to a vegetarian meal, and then not selling Dharma. So I really felt inspired by these three commitments of him. So in the past also, there were many Tibetans who were selling Dharma. And so Zelenato Rangdrul and many other masters have made promises not to do the business using the Dharma. We should not engage in Dharma teachings looking for some kind of a name, fame, or gaining more recognition from people, and then do Dharma business. So externally, if you do this, you may be sitting on a high throne and giving teachings, but internally, you are actually creating negative karma. And so, on the part of the disciples, and also, you need to have a pure motivation. In order for the Dharma to become an actual true Dharma practice, in this case, the Dharma, Buddha Dharma, we need to have the principle of taking refuge in the Buddha Dharma and Sangha. It's not enough just to say, I take refuge in the Buddha Dharma and Sangha. You need to know what these three jewels are. And in order to understand the three, we need to understand mainly what the Buddha Dharma, Buddha jewel, Dharma jewel is. And then you will find the Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, who who attained the four Buddha bodies. You will understand what a Buddha is through understanding the Dharma, and therefore you take refuge in the Dharma but through this understanding of the Dharma, and the more you are convinced of the teaching of the Buddha, and you have more inspiration to practice, you will also have greater faith and belief in the Buddha and also the Sangha, the community. And therefore, for the Buddhists, these three, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, if you gain a reason-based belief in them, then you'll be able to take refuge correctly. And this way of taking refuge in the three jewels keeps you away from the wrong path. So, regarding the Sanskrit tradition, the main practices are the bodhicitta, and the understanding of emptiness, in order to reach the goal is enlightenment, Buddhahood, which is free from both the obscurations of afflictive emotions and the obscuration to knowledge. And so, such a path, whether you call it a bodhisattva path, or it's also in relation to other tradition, and it's called Mahayana tradition. So, Mahayana or bodhicitta is said to be the path which distinguishes you from the lower paths. And therefore, from this, on the part of the disciples, you have to have a very clear idea of what they taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and they bring up this altruistic motivation of bodhicitta and say this prayer. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the accumulations I create through generosity and so forth, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. This is said three times. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the accumulations I create through generosity and so forth, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So today, the Tibetan medical doctors are the main disciples for receiving this initiation, and then there's a huge number of students from schools gathered here today. So In order to practice the Dharma, as I usually say, we are following this pure Nalanda tradition. Therefore, I usually give an introduction to the Buddhism, to spiritual traditions. So there are a few of the students here. And then downstairs we have lots of, there are lots of school kids. So how should I give the introductory teaching on spiritual traditions? So perhaps I think I should do like this. So I am someone who has now reached around about 79 years of age, and I have lots of seen lots of things and heard a lot of things, and therefore I have actually personally have some to give a summary of my experience. First of all, in this world, all sentient beings, including these insects, the bugs, want happiness and do not want suffering. There's no question about this. So perhaps this very subtle or small bugs may have smaller pains and pleasure. The suffering and pain and pleasure in connection that arise in connection with mind, maybe the animals have less of them because they have to do with our own mental thinking. And therefore, the animals do not have so many hopes and fears and like us human beings. So we, since the time of our in the womb of our mother and after birth and until death, we do not want suffering but want happiness. So these 7 billion people on this earth are same in this sense. But then, as Shantideva says, although wanting to get rid of suffering, they run after suffering, though wanting the happiness, they destroy the happiness as if destroying their enemy. So I was born in Amdo, and then I came to Lhasa in my, when I was a small child, to Lhasa. And then I was installed on a throne by recognizing me as the Dalai Lama. And then I have I grew up in this way. But the best thing that happened to me is that I have been able to study the Buddha Dharma. And so in the beginning, I was in a tradition where we considered some kind of custom as very important, and that is one part of my life. And then I went through lots of problems and difficulties, and at one point I had to run a flee until Tromo in And then I lived in Potala Palace and Nobilinka Palace during the winter and summer, respectively. And I didn't have much interaction with the common people. But when I went to Tromo from Lhasa, I met on the way. I met many people. And then when I returned to Lhasa from Tromo, again I met many people passing through villages. So I saw the situations and the conditions in the Tibetan villages in those days. And then the times changed, and then I was in China as well. And then in Beijing, I stayed for a few months, and met Mao Zedong and many of the Chinese leaders at that time. And I met Mao Zedong many times. And he started the revolution in China, opposing the serfdom system, where people are made slaves and oppressed and by others. So people abusing other people and was opposed. And so there was this revolution in China, and I was quite impressed by that. So those people, the communist Chinese at that time, were not selfish. They really were dedicated for the common people, especially those who were poor and needy. And so they were really good. So I felt quite inspired and admired them. And so I was in different parts of China as well. But then, at the same time, this system became authoritarian system, and which caused lots of fear in people's minds. So when fear is caused, there cannot be, when you have fear in people's minds, there cannot be peace of mind. And then fear gives rise to anxiety, and then there is unhappiness. So, of course, basically Marxism is great, and it's especially its economic policy. It talks about, it doesn't talk about capitalism, but then equal distribution. This is emphasized in Marxism. So this is a moral ethics. In capitalism, of course, you only think about profit. You're not thinking about benefiting the general public and the masses so much, but making profit yourself. So it's changing, of course, these days. But then the authoritarian system gives fear, causes fear. So I usually say Marxism is very good, but Lenin spoiled it by emphasizing authoritarian to control. So he of course had to do that under certain very specific circumstances, of course. And then there was the Bolshevik Revolution, and then the Chinese Revolution also happened. And then during those revolutions, they used force, and there was lots of fighting. So during war times, of course, you may need secrecy and control and all this. So when these kind of revolutions began, people used force and kept things secret, and also there was control. Everything was controlled by the leaders. So, of course, that was needed at that time. But then that remained with people, even when the situation changed. And then, after having been to China, then I was able to come to India, and I met many of the Indian freedom fighters who were there with Gandhiji, and such as Rajendra Prasad, the first Indian president. He was really a humble person who lived a very simple and contented life. And then I was able to visit the Indian parliament, the Rajya Sabha and Lok Sabha, and I saw the democracy in play. So at that time, in 1956, Chou Enlai, Kaur Onji, also came to India, in Delhi. And then we had a luncheon together. And then I told Chou Enlai that in the Indian parliament, people had no fear. The parliamentarians seemed very without any kind of rules. It's all so noisy, and whereas in our parliament, in the Congress, the Chinese National Congress, that it wasn't like that. It was very quiet. And then, in response to this, Zhou Enlai told me that since you left China, there had been lots of changes. So I really didn't have anything to say to him when he said this. And so I had this kind of experience. And then the greatest experience is that since becoming a refugee in 1959, I had the opportunity to visit Singapore, Malaysia, and Thailand in the 1960s and 67 or something. And then I was able to go to Russia, Soviet Union at that time in 1979. And then I was able to go to other places like Europe and America. So I've been able to meet in these travels, during these travels, meet with people who are religious, spiritual, atheists, and people who are doubtful about spiritual traditions, and the business people, and then poor and needy people, destitutes. So I have been able to meet people from all walks of life, and because of that, of course, everyone pays attention to material development. Thinking that there would be happiness if we have all the material necessities. So, of course, in the West, there has been a great material development and progress through science and technology, which seem to have been focused mainly on material development alone. And then in the eastern part of the world, they followed the footsteps of the Western world like that, focusing on material development. So the existing education system that we have now is actually focused on material development. So it's mainly focused on material development alone. And so people who grew up under such circumstance are not able to think other than thinking of material development for happiness. And then when you grow up under such culture and habit, you grow in this kind of habit. So the whole society has become like that. So that being the case, then if you ask, does it give real, true happiness to people or not? And so today, we're renowned, intelligent scientists, businessmen, business people, and educationists, and intellectuals see that material development alone cannot get rid of our peace of a disturbed mind. And so towards the end of the 20th century, there has been a change in people's thinking. Now we are in the beginning of the 21st century, so this trend is still continuing. Therefore, people have now become aware that without their being, without peace of mind, we cannot produce a peaceful world merely through the material development. And so this peace should happen first, start in the family. Without that, even a family cannot be in peace and happy. And therefore, even amongst the scientists today, So, of course, sensory perceptions, our sensory experiences related to form, visual form, sound, odor, taste, and touch have to do with our sensory experiences. So seeing beautiful objects or beautiful listening to interesting music or smelling a fragrant, some fragrance, and then good taste and good touch or tactile sensation. And of course, you can draw some kind of satisfaction or happiness through sensory experiences. So those who look for happiness only on the basis of these sensory experiences do not. So the sensory experiences alone cannot give a true mental experience of happiness. If we look at someone who is really rich, wealthy, and has everything that is needed in life, but is, you can see, there's such a person full of unhappiness. And so they may go around places for distraction, but then they are not able to overcome their mental problems. So I know many friends. There are many friends who are full of stress, to use an English term, and then they also are lonely. Although they have all necessities of life, they are still lonely. So what I'm mainly saying is that just focusing on the material values, material developments, and hoping that you will gain happiness through them, through that, of course, you will not be able to overcome mental anxiety and fear and so forth. And therefore, today, medical scientists, through their experiment and analysis, they found that if you have peace of mind, you'll have physical health as well. If you are disturbed, mentally disturbed, then that also disturbs your immune system, and you will not have physical health as well. So this is what they have found, and therefore, the material development alone cannot overcome people's difficulties and problems, and cannot give them real happiness. So many learned people say this, and therefore, what we are left with is turning to the spiritual traditions. But then, many people are not religious. They do not follow any spiritual tradition or religious tradition. Over 1 billion people are like that. And so they also are human beings, not wanting suffering, but wanting happiness. So they need happiness. And therefore, the first level is to find a means for the 7 billion people to have happiness, which comes through love and compassion. This is commonly understood. So for the last 3,000 or 4,000 years, all the spiritual religious traditions have acknowledged that love and compassion are the root of human happiness, and therefore they teach love and compassion, whether they are theistic or non-theistic religions. All of them consider love and compassion to be very important. And so this is seen as a root of our peace of mind. And so all the religious traditions teach this. Love and compassion. Not to talk about 7 billion people, even animals admire love. If you treat them well, kindly, then they like you. If you show them If you are unkindly to them, then they also have the same response to you. And so love and compassion is something that every sentient being like. So, for example, beings that are born from mother, there is a strong connection of, between the child and the mother. There is a strong affection because the child has to survive through love of the mother. That is the, that's how our life has started, with affection from our mother. In our childhood, we survive and we grew up under, through the kindness and affection of a mother. If the mother were, if our mother were very angry and unkindly, then we wouldn't have experienced affection. So all the 7 billion, the entire 7 billion people have the same experience, the experience of affection from our mother, and the, because of that strong affection, it also has become part of it's in our blood. And so, the greater love and compassion in your life, you have greater physical health. It's very clear that we, as human beings, are social animal. We have to live together. We cannot live alone. And so we are social animal. Because of that, as long as you are a social animal, then there needs to be a factor which actually binds us, brings us together, which is sense of community, sense of belonging. So even the animals, the social animal have this. So even the bees, the honey bees, because they're a social animal, they have this sense of community. And so we, human beings, also have this by nature. But what we are lacking is the way people are educated is we are given an education which focuses only on material development. Although we have experienced affection in our childhood, but as we grew up, because of the education, the surrounding conditions and education and so forth, then we see that people abuse others, deceive others, and make money. And so with love and compassion, of course, you will not do this. And then we grew up with the idea that, oh, of course, compassion and love are good, but, and therefore, these 7 billion people on this earth, amongst them, those lacking love and compassion are not happy. If you look at history of the world, in the 20th century, over 200 million people were killed through wars, disregarding the life of others, but looking only for one's own profit and gain for one's own side, and defeating others. And so we made such a distinction, and then we considered that if we could defeat and overcome our enemy, that is a great gain for us, victory for us. And so this is how we have been in our history. So if human beings in the past have lived in with love and compassion as the main factor, then of course the 7 billion people today would not have the problems, these conflicts and so forth. So what we need to do is we need to change our thinking, our mind, which cannot be done by changing the surroundings, the external amenities, but we need to look into our mind and see what factors cause us unhappiness or are bad for us, and what are those factors in our mind which are good for us. So if we, even in the case of medicine, I mean, external things, we say, well, some things are good for us because they are medicinal, and others are not good because they are poisonous and so forth. And so then we make this distinction and discard those which are poisonous and take those which are medicinal. And so similarly, in the case of the mind, we have these different factors. So these days I say this, we are talking about physical hygiene, we are studying about it, and therefore similarly we need the hygiene of emotion as well. So what disturbs our mind is are those of the afflictive emotions, the negative disturbing emotions, and so we need to get rid of that and develop emotional hygiene. So because these have the bearing on our pain and pleasure, whether you believe in religion or not, whether you believe in a past and future life or not, or whether you believe in God, Creator or not, but everyone knows that love and compassion is what we need for our survival. And therefore, today, many educators, especially scientists, who are unbiased, sometimes it seems that those of us who believe in some religious tradition, if we compare ourselves with scientists, the scientists are better, they're unbiased. So in our text also, of course, there's this emphasis on being unbiased. But then the bias always happens amongst us. So we need to be unbiased and intelligent, thinking critically. The scientists who are neuroscientists examining our brain and so forth, and also medical scientists, they have found that love and compassion are very important for us, in our life. And so, in America, since some years, people have done research and experiment on the effect of love and compassion by starting some program of training in compassion. And so for about 3 weeks. And on a daily basis, the participants are given some instructions and then they meditate on the compassion for 1 hour or so each session. And then before the program started, the participants' stress level was checked. So there are different ways of checking the level of stress in people by checking their saliva, some kind of a substance in the saliva, and so forth, and then blood pressure. And then at the end of the program of 3 weeks or so of the training of compassion, the scientists have found that there's less stress. The stress is reduced, and then the people become happier and more receptive to their colleagues and other friends, and their interaction with them is improved. So the existing educational system, without talking about religion, so I've been telling that we need to include the education on love and compassion in our educational system. So there is a movement that is now starting. So on my part, I always think that firstly, I am a human being. And secondly, then I say I am maybe a Tibetan or a Buddhist. So that's on a secondary level. As a human being, I'm thinking of how to bring about happiness in humanity. And so, having discussed with many people, I found that from my own experience, if you have a good heart, a warm heart, then you have greater happiness. And whereas if you are full of hate, love-hate kind of attitude, then there is more problems. And therefore, I promote secular ethics, which has been practiced in India for over 3,000 years. So I say that if the Buddha were to appear today in our world, he would profess or teach this secular ethics. So even with the Buddha's teachings, such as selflessness, teaching on selflessness, even at some points of time, the Buddha has said to some disciples that the five psychophysical aggregates are the loads, and then the one who carries that load is the person. And so, as if showing as if there is some kind of an independent, autonomous self or Atma. So today, I'm thinking of benefiting and helping the 7 billion people through this kind of secular ethics. So whatever people are doing in their own profession, through those professions, people should work to help others. Of course, we cannot force people to have happiness, but each individual must think, use their intelligence, and find reason to bring about this happiness. And then the main cause of our pain and suffering is this extreme self-centered attitude. As we say, this is what is recognized in Buddhism. As Lama Cherpa, the Guru Puja, says, that the self-cherishing attitude is the source of all misfortunes, and cherishing others is the source of all happiness. Excellent qualities. As Shantideva says, all happiness in the world comes from its thinking of others. Whereas all suffering in the world comes from the self-cherishing, thinking of happiness for one's own self. So the more you think of, the more you are altruistic towards others, then you wouldn't have any kind of a fear or suspicion with others, thinking that, oh, this might not this person harm me or cause some trouble to me. So there's no basis for, if you have the greater altruistic you are, you will have greater self-confidence and inner strength. So when you have these, then whatever you do, whatever you say, will be transparent. You can be transparent. You will not be dishonest and deceptive, hypocrite. So if you are just focusing on your own self, then you will be hypocritic. And with that, you cannot build trust with others. So there's distrust. If you are not transparent, then you have suspicion. With suspicion, you cannot have trust from others. And without that, you cannot have friends. Even between couple, of course, if you cannot trust each other, there is no. You will not be able to go along with each other. Even that also is the case between children and their parents. And even in the case of animals, between the parents and the kids. So for trust, we need to be honest, truthful, and transparent. And therefore, the root of happiness is, for that, it's important to have transparency. That comes through altruistic attitude. If you remain selfish, focusing only on your own happiness, then this will not happen. So all the troubles and problems in the world from the battles and conflicts that are happening on a large scale down to the family situations. This is the case, that selfishness leads to problems. And therefore, what Shantideva says is true, that all the misfortunes or unhappiness in the world come through selfishness. So the material progress that has happened in the world is because we want happiness. And so we also need to think about the other side of bringing about happiness, which is not the material development alone. And therefore, secularism is something that has been practiced in India, secular ethics, and Indian constitution is also based on secularism. And then in the West, this term secularism gives the connotation that it is something against religion, distancing from religion. And of course, this idea is because of the French Revolution and the Russian Bolshevik Revolution, where people have been against the religious institutions. So, as far as I'm concerned, I became very close to Mao Zedong in those days in China. And at the end he said, religion is opium. So he found trust in me. And so Mao Zedong at that time told me at an earlier occasion that you have a very scientific mind. And at the end of our meeting he said, religion is opium. So why he said that is that he only has the idea of religion in terms of people going to a temple and doing some prayer and making offerings and so forth. And therefore, the religious institutions, the organizations, were used to abuse people, to deceive and abuse and to oppress and therefore, in France in those days, the French Revolution happened because the kings were supported by the religious institution to abuse the subject. And similarly, this has happened in relation to the Bolshevik Revolution as well. The czars and so forth were supported by the religious institutions. And so this, of course, using the religion, name of religion, people have abused others. But with regard to love and compassion, nobody will oppose them. So the French and the Bolshevik Revolution and the Chinese Revolution, this happened because of thinking of the greater good of the masses. And so this is love and compassion in practice. And so Mao Zedong, of course, only took religion in terms of how people go to some shrines and temples and go to prayers and so forth, and how some religious institutions abuse people. So if he actually came to know what religions talk about, that they talk about love and compassion and so forth, then of course he won't say that religion is opium. And therefore, secularism is very important in today's world, and the foundation for that is to be honest, to be sincerely motivated, and to have had love and compassion. So if we want secular ethics as a means to bring happiness, we cannot buy them it cannot be produced in the factories, nor can we buy them in supermarkets and so forth. So we need to use our intelligence to see that love and compassion are very beneficial to us. So with this understanding and insight, then we need to promote love and compassion in our minds. and find so love and compassion as recognized as very important in our life in all the religious traditions for thousands of years, and they really are helpful. So the religions are really helpful to people, have been very helpful. But religion alone cannot be sufficient. So there are many religious people who really are corrupt amongst Hindus, Muslims, Christians, and amongst Tibetan Buddhists as well. So when I meet Indians, I tell them that you are very religious people. In your houses, you have Shiva Lingam or Ganesh statue or images of gods and goddesses. And then you offer flowers and incense and do worship. So most of you do that. I tell them, but your prayers to the gods is as if praying, asking for the success of your corrupted life. So I jokingly tell the Indians that. So without yourself being honest and truthful, but abusing others, and with such a lifestyle, how can you make prayers to the gods, which is against the law of cause and effect? So if while your lifestyle, you live a very corrupted life, but then you ostensibly kind of pray to gods for help, if you do these, then you are living a very hypocritic life. So I usually say that if we are not careful and sincere, then religion is actually teaching us, would be like teaching us hypocrisy. So rather than being religious, it would be better to be someone who is not following any religious tradition and then live a corrupted life. Whereas while professing to be religious, if you live a corrupted life, that is hypocrisy. So all the major religious traditions consider regards love and compassion as primary factors. But then they differ in philosophical views, which are to actually to boost the followers' belief and in God, for example, in the case of theistic God religions. So those following theistic religions believe that everything is created by God and everything is in His hands, and therefore it helps them to practice and love and compassion and to promote them. I know many religions, people in Christianity, Judaism, Islam, and so forth. For example, in the case of Christians, there are many Christian brothers and sisters who go to very poor, remote villages and give education and health care to these poor villagers living in a very poor condition themselves. And so, with the theistic religious view, philosophical view, they are helped. Now, for those of the religious people who follow non-theistic religions, such as non-theistic Sankhya school, and then Jainism and Buddhism, which do not believe in a creator God, but believe that everything comes through causes and conditions, believe in law of causality. And then mainly they talk about karma, which means action. If you do good action, then this will give happiness, a good result. And if you do bad action, then you will have, as a consequence, bad results. The more you help others, the greater good for you, and the more you harm others, the greater suffering for yourself. So of these three non-theistic religious traditions, the first two, Sankhya, non-theistic Sankhya and Jainism, although they do not believe in a creator God, but they still believe in an Atman, an independent soul theory, whereas Buddhism does not believe in such both, neither a creator God nor this kind of a permanent soul, a permanent single and autonomous soul or self. So if you were to assert such a self, which is permanent, unchanging, single and autonomous, I mean, of course, and if you you will be not be able to hold on to such position if you really do critical analysis. But then, because things can change, you have some basis for making transformation within yourself. And then you will seek, if you see that there is a possibility for change, you'll seek the means to make that change and transformation. So all the religious traditions, of course, teach, because they teach love and compassion, they are really helpful to people. But these different philosophical views and concepts are because of different mental dispositions amongst human beings. And therefore, despite the difference in the philosophical view, we need to, on the basis of the love and compassion, which is common to all religious traditions, we need to respect all other religious traditions, which have been really helpful and beneficial in the past, as well as they will be beneficial in the future, and they are beneficial today. And therefore, as a Buddhist, on the second, my second commitment is recognizing this benefit of all religious traditions to humanity, I promote religious harmony amongst the religious traditions. And so whenever I have opportunity, I promote and interact with these religious traditions. I tell a story to the kids. In one public talk in Australia, a Christian minister, when he introduced me to the public, he said that I am a good Christian. And then when my turn came, I told him that I considered you are a good Buddhist. And so there is reason for this, because we practice, both practice love, compassion, contentment, sincerity, and we both practice them. But we have different philosophical views. And then last year I met one Hindu master who really was serving people, poor people, and we had discussion about the Buddhism and Hinduism, and I said to him that because Hinduism, both these traditions have the practice of shamatha or calm abiding, single-pointed concentration and insight and so forth, we have the same common practice, but the difference is they believe in an Atma in the case of Hinduism, and believe in non-self theory in Buddhism. But I said, that doesn't matter. It's a private business, I told him. So you draw benefit through your belief in an Atman, whereas I also draw a benefit from belief in non-self theory. So both Hinduism and Buddhism have this common practice of single-pointed concentration and vipassana, insight. So it's very important for us to have religious harmony. If we are angry at the other religious traditions, of course, we cannot wipe them out anyway. So it's no use. So during one interfaith dialogue, I told the Christians that if you hate the other religious traditions, this doesn't really help, because those traditions will still live. And if the other traditions also hate the Christianity, that's no use, because Christianity will live and continue. And so it's better to live in harmony, I said. And so, of all the religious traditions, the major religious traditions, which have some philosophical ideas and philosophical views, with regard to teaching on dependent origination, it's only Buddhism that teaches it. And therefore, I usually say that the essence of Buddhism is the ethical practice of nonviolence and the philosophical understanding of dependent origination. So all the religious traditions teach nonviolence, not harming others, whereas dependent origination is a unique concept in Buddhism. So with regard to this dependency, that things are dependently originated, today, amongst intellectuals, many people pay attention to this, take interest in it, especially scientists, neuroscientists, brain scientists, and then physicists, quantum physicists. So they say that this dependent origination is, they say that there's nothing that exists objectively. So from the quantum physicist's point of view, because things cannot be found objectively, they seem to get the idea that there's nothing, that everything just dissolves, disintegrates. But then in Buddhism we say that although things cannot be found when analyzed, these still exist by way of convention, dependence. So I tell people that when they want to understand and learn, begin their investigation into emptiness, they should first study quantum physics. So many scientists take interest in the teaching on dependent origination. So amongst some scientists whom I know, there are many renowned ones, well-known scientists. When we talk about love, compassion, and dependent origination, and so forth, they feel really inspired by this, and they really admire these teachings, these concepts. And therefore, as a Buddhist, first, as a human being, we can see how we, as Buddhists, can contribute to humanity. And it's not, we are not talking about proletizing the other people, but helping people. And Buddhism is not about just rituals, doing some rituals, following customs and so forth. Buddhism in general, and particularly Tibetan tradition of Buddhism, where we do a rigorous study over 20, 30, 40 years. It is only the Tibetan Buddhists who do such extensive and rigorous study. Having met many different followers of the different traditions of Buddhism, I have found this to be the case. And so, in terms of knowledge of Buddhism, there is none like Tibetans. And this the teaching of the Buddha, which was first taught in Sanskrit, and which has come from Sanskrit to us, and also in Pali it is found, but it is the language of the Tibetan language which can explain the profound and the vast teaching of the Nalanda tradition of Buddhism. So So we can do this thoroughly, and we should be proud of it, so the children should know this. So if you know some conversational phrases, of course, with regards to modern subjects like science and so forth, Tibetan language has not developed much. But in terms of Buddhist philosophy and understanding of the teaching of the Buddha, as a Buddhist, I feel proud, thanks to the great Tibetan emperors and the translators of Tibet in the past. And Master Chandrakshita, who really instructed the Tibetans to study Buddhism through our own language, and he was the one who asked the Tibetans to translate the teachings of the Buddha into Tibetan. And so, mainly Buddhism that spread in Tibet came from India. And so we have the Ganjur and Denjur collections of the teachings of the Buddha, of Buddhism, most except for maybe 10 or 15 volumes or text in these in this collection of 300 plus volumes, the rest were translated from India. So we have to feel very proud of the fact that we have such a vast and profound tradition. So for over 1,000 years, after the Tibetan kings have consolidated the Tibetan land, and then Tibet became disintegrated, fragmented. But then still, wherever Tibetans lived, they were bound together by our language and our culture that is related to this language. So we lived together with the sense of being Tibetan because of this. And so I usually say this is the soul of Tibetan people. As a Tibetan, if I say this as a Tibetan, having met with many people, and then having met particularly indigenous people in South Africa or and other countries, having met with them and discussed about their culture, and how to preserve their culture. So I asked them whether they have their own script. Most of them do not have. So I told them that they must have a script of their own. If they do not have it yet, they should devise one so that they can preserve their own culture in writing. And so for us Tibetans, for at least the last 2,000 years, we have the Tibetan script. Whether it was newly devised by Thomas Sambota in the 7th century or it, before that, we know that if there is this script called Xiangxiong Marik. So we need to be able to use this language. Of course, we need to make improvement over it by translating different subjects, supplement where we are lacking in terms of modern subjects. And there are people who are already doing this from inside Tibet and others. And so, when we think about our own culture and language and so forth, we should feel proud of ourselves. So in the 60s and early 70s, there were some Tibetans who had said that having been born as Tibetans, they were really unfortunate to be Tibetans. But then as time went by, and today we have come to to a situation where even non-Tibetans claim to be Tibetans, especially those who illegally migrate to America or Europe. And then there are people who dress like monks and nuns also to go into those countries. And so we need to be proud and confident. Of course, it doesn't mean that we need we have to look down upon others, but we need to be compassionate and ethical in our life. So today, even in India, the Indians living around the Tibetan settlements have said that Tibetans are not lying. Tibetans don't lie, they are very honest and so forth. But even in America and Europe and other countries, I mean, people say this. But then today there are few misbehaving Tibetans in America and so forth. And some Indians living in Kulu and Manali regions of Himachal Pradesh have said that the Tibetans who have come into exile in the past, in 59 and 60s, they were really trustworthy. But then later on, this has changed. They said people who came later into India were not so trustworthy. And so we have to be honest. And it doesn't help this individual and the Tibetan society, the Tibetan community. So as a Tibetan, as Tibetans inside Tibet, the Chinese have destroyed our religion. But if we, though we have this rich culture, if we ignore our own culture, our own tradition, then that's a disgrace. So I wanted to say this. So it's really unfortunate if you disgrace, or if you are become a disgrace to our own tradition. So this is an introduction to the teaching of the Buddha. The Ganjur and Denjur literature are our text books for study. Of course, some of them have to do with rituals, but the important part of them is deal with psychology, which is very, very relevant in today's world, in the 21st century. And therefore, we have talked about extracting the material from this Ganjur and Denjur literature relating to psychology. And some scholars have done that. And the book is finished. It will be translated into Hindi, Chinese, and English. And when the books come out, the Tibetan book will be published this year, and then the students must study them. So whether you have prayers to say or not in schools, these books will be really helpful if you study them. Even if when you leave school and you go into college and universities, if you really have good understanding, good knowledge of what is said in these books, written in these books, then you will be able to become good professors of psychology in the universities and so forth. So you should take interest in it. So this is an introduction to Buddhism. So to do the blessing of Medicine Buddha, so if you receive this, I've done it in South India, in Sera, and having given this blessing of Medicine Buddha in Sera Me Monastery, I said from today there will be nobody who would be sick. And if after receiving this blessing of Medicine Buddha, and if everybody becomes healthy, then the doctors are useless. So, of course, this will not be the case. Me too, I do recite the Medicine Buddha mantra every day, and I have pain in my knees and to my eyesight, and it's not good. So, of course, it, through the blessing, I mean, the blessing will help, but it's not realistic to say that all your sicknesses would be eliminated through this blessing. So even the Buddha himself has taught medicine. And then in tantras, we have, for example, in the Kalachakra Tantra, there's mention of using medicine. Medicine is taught. So even the Buddhas have taught. And then, of course, when you become sick, you should seek medical treatment, and when you take the medicines, you should recite the mantra of Medicine Buddha as well. So you should you would be going too extreme to say that by reciting the Medicine Buddha mantra that you will not be sick. What is being done is is making dharma offerings, ritual cake offerings. To drive away any beings So they are asked to leave this place where the blessing, the permission to practice the seven medicine Buddha is being given. And then having sent them away, the master creates Vajra fence around this place to stop any hindrances. Please recite this, repeat this. So you are asking all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, please say your name here. From now on, until enlightenment, the Medicine Buddha, Vajra Yogyebo, I'll take him as my meditational deity. And Master, please give me the transmission. Master, please give me the transmission. And then next comes the practice of recitation of the seven branch practice three times. So we'll do first do the generation of bodhicitta. So for that we'll use the verse of refuge and bodhicitta. So imagine, as you can see the Thangka painting up there, so imagine the Lama in the form of Medicine Buddha, blue in color. In his left hand he's holding a bowl filled with medicinal things, and then in his right hand he's holding the medicinal plant. And then above in the space, Buddha Shakyamuni, who lived around 2,600 years ago. So, with regard to the Buddha himself, of course, the Buddha exists at all times, but he assumed passing away in 2,600 years ago, coming in the form of a Buddha. So I have a story to tell here, which is like happened in Thailand. So there was one bhikshu who was considered as an arahant, someone who has overcome the all the afflictive emotions that are within ourselves. And so in our Abhidharma texts, in our Madhyamaka texts, we usually mention the arahat in accordance with the Abhidharma tradition. And so perhaps he was someone like that. And so this master, Thai master, when he was sitting in meditation one day, he saw in his vision the Buddha surrounded by other arahats. And therefore, so from then on, he had said that the Buddha still is alive. Is still, although he 2,600 years ago, the emanation, the supreme emanation form of the Buddha had passed away, but the Buddha still lives, he said. And therefore, he although in according to his own Theravada tradition, the Buddha cannot be living anymore, but he said that the Buddha still lives. And discarded his own philosophical view. And then one of his disciples went to China and made some prayer in front of a Kuan Yin statue. And when he was bowing at the Kuan Yin statue, from the Kuan Yin statue heart, a streak of light came down and touching his crown. So somebody had taken picture of that as well, so which I saw. And so amongst Tibetans, there were people who have pure visions of deities, the main deities of the mandala, and receiving blessings from them. And so these are, on one level, they are mysterious, but they are there, facts. So Dalung Shabdung, the previous Dalung Shabdung Rinpoche, who lived in Chinese Gulag for many years, where he was tortured, and then later on he was released and came to India, and I met him many times. And there was no reason for him to lie to me, because if he told lie, he wouldn't gain anything. He wouldn't have gained anything. And so he told me, frankly, that when he was giving some teaching, transmission of the Daglung Gagyu to Dilko Khenze Rinpoche in Nepal, on the beam of the the temple that he was giving this transmission to the Gokenza Rinpoche, he saw all the lineage lamas of that transmission on the beam of the temple. So when a master has some degree of experience, inner experience, then the Buddhas are always there that they can have visions of through their own spiritual. So we should not think that the Buddha had passed away and no more, but you should also have this firm faith that the Buddha lives, as it is said, that if you have faith, then the Buddha is there. So, in the study of Prajaparamita texts, we study about the four Buddha bodies. To understand this thoroughly, precisely, we need to understand that there is a potential for attaining the four Buddha bodies on the basis of the innate clear light mind. So as it is said, until the space you are embodied with the five Buddha kayas, so the five pure bodies of a Buddha is mentioned in the tantras. So if you know this well, there's also mentioned that we have the seed, the substantial cause for the three Buddha bodies as well. And therefore, if you understand the four Buddha bodies, then you will be able to see, understand what the form, emanation form of Buddha and so forth are. And so, someone who has attained the union of clear light and illusory body, we can also understand from that point of view of understanding this. And therefore, the three, body, speech, and mind, the three secrets become inseparable from each other when you attain the union state. And so you should think that the Buddha is really here, and he's surrounded by the eight close Bodhisattva disciples in the space, and then the great masters like Kashyap, Mahakashyapa, the disciples of the Buddha, and then the masters of Nalanda, such as Master Nagarjuna and his disciples, and Saraha, and the 80 disciples, as well as the Asanga and his followers and so forth, and then the Tibetan Buddhist masters of the Tibetan Buddhist traditions, including the Jonang tradition, Sakyaka, Yugyeluk, and Nyingma. And so, as a prelude to the generating bodhicitta, this altruistic intention, will say the seven limb prayer. So we'll not say it three times. We'll say the seven limb prayer as it is found in Samantabhadra prayer. The long version one time, and then the final verse two more times. So put your hands together, palms together. So the main the objective is to gain, to attain enlightenment, which comes about by generating wisdom and understanding, which goes against our ignorance. So, when you develop this wisdom, understanding reality, then it will counter ignorance that is within us. And through that, you go through the process of purifying your mind of the negative emotions, and then progress along the path as referred by this mantra, Gati Gati, which means go, go, or imperative case, go beyond, go perfectly beyond, and lay the foundation of Bodhi or enlightenment. So you should have, when you develop this firm determination to be free from samsara, then you reach the path of what is known as the path of accumulation, and the next is the path of preparation or joining, and then the next, when you see the emptiness directly, you reach the path of seeing, which is a path of an Arya being, which is a transcendent path. Transcendent meaning it's beyond the ordinary level of sentient beings. And then next is the Parasangati stage, where you overcome the still more negative emotions, and then Bodhisattva means to lay the foundation for the highest enlightenment, the great enlightenment of Buddhahood. So, which is an embodiment of the four Buddha Kayas. So, if you set your goal as the Buddhahood, merely developing this insight into emptiness, which is held by single-pointed concentration, will not lead you to that goal of Buddhahood. So you need, in order to overcome what is known as the cognitive obscurations that are in us, which hinder us from seeing everything as it is, we need to develop a mind or an insight using the very subtle, innate, clear light mind. So in order to fulfill the purpose, the complete or the total purpose of meditation on emptiness, we need to also couple the insight into emptiness using that very subtle mind with the bodhicitta, his altruistic intention. So without bodhicitta, you cannot reach Buddhahood. If you have bodhicitta, if you develop bodhicitta, then there is possibility for Buddhahood. So this Buddha, bodhicitta delineates whether you are going to become a Buddha in the end or not. And so, thinking of benefiting all sentient beings who are infinite, you are thinking of benefiting, in terms of benefiting others, you are thinking of leading them to the state of Buddhahood, the state of omniscience, not merely bringing them to called higher rebirth or mere liberation from the afflictive emotions. And so, When you think about along these lines, then you will be able to feel that there's a possibility of attaining Buddhahood. And then when you see that this is possible for you, you'll see others in this condition where they are ignorant about the reality of things and so forth. And therefore, you'll feel compassion, which helps us to bring about bodhicitta to within ourselves, and therefore have this firm determination to become a Buddha in the end for the benefit of all sentient beings. So, when you say this verse to the Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, I take refuge until enlightenment. And here, the enlightenment is the great enlightenment, which is Buddhahood. According to Mahayana Uttara Tantra by Maitreya, which goes through what are known as the seven Vajra points. And one of them is the Buddha nature that is within ourselves, because of which we can see there's possibility of Buddhahood for ourselves. And so you are saying, I take refuge until I'm enlightened. And therefore, for your understanding and insight into emptiness to help you fulfill your goal completely, then you need bodhicitta. And therefore, you say, by the accumulations I create through generosity and so forth, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So this is bodhicitta. So this kind of altruistic attitude, which is based and founded on reason, is going to be very firm and stable and powerful. But although I do not claim to have bodhicitta, but when I reflect on bodhicitta, it really gives me so much feeling that shed tears and hairs on my body stand on end and so forth. And then you can dedicate your resources, body, speech, and mind, and so forth, for others' well-being. And because bodhicitta is developed on reason, based on reason, by doing critical thinking, reflection, and analysis, which are done by great masters like Nagarjuna and so forth, and for bodhicitta, development of bodhicitta, cultivation of bodhicitta, Shantideva's Bodhisattva Charya Avatara is the best text, and as a supplement or the support for that, there are texts written by Master Nagarjuna, such as Ratnavali and so forth. And therefore, when you have some sense of bodhicitta, then you will have self-confidence and courage to work for others. So if you can have this attitude, altruistic attitude, you will have peace of mind, health, good health. It helps you in short-term and long-term goals. Whereas, contrary to that, if you remain selfish, you will not reach Buddhahood. There's no happiness in this life as well. Therefore, Shantideva says, without exchanging the happiness of oneself with the suffering of others, there's live alone attaining Buddhahood. Even in samsara, you will not have happiness. And therefore, Nagarjuna also dedicates that may I be able to dedicate myself for the sustenance of others, all sentient beings, becoming like elements and so forth, the fire and so forth. And so if you can have such an attitude, then it's worthy of you to have obtained this human life. And having met with the Buddha's teaching, we as Buddhists, of course, if we don't really practice what the Buddha has taught us, then it doesn't make sense to say that we are followers of the Buddha. I always say this, that although we do, in the seven-branch practice, we do request for teaching, but if the Buddha were to come here, and the Nagarjuna, Master Nagarjuna, were to come here, they would say that, I have given this teaching and that teaching, but you do not really study them. So we hear that amongst Tibetan kids, there are school kids, there are people who those who take drugs, which is very sad. And so this is because of lack of instruction, good instruction from the teachers and the religious or spiritual instructors in the schools as well. The school children themselves alone are not to be blamed. So we need to be really serious with the practice of the Dharma, not leaving it just to customs and tradition. And so imagine the Buddha, medicine Buddha, and then surrounded by the other medicine Buddhas, and then the Buddha Shakyamuni surrounded by Buddha's Bodhisattvas and the great masters of the past. And so this seven limb practice are prostration,
and then offering, making offering and confession, rejoicing in the merits and urging the Tathagatas to turn the wheel of Dharma, giving teaching, and then requesting not to remain and not pass away and dedicating the roots of virtues. So you, lying amongst humans, going to freedom in the present, past, and future, in the worlds of 10 directions, to you all, with my body, speech, and sincere mind, I bow down with the energy of aspiration for the Bodhisattva way, with a sense of deep respect, and with as many bodies as atoms of the world, to all you Buddhas visualized as real, I bow down. On every atom are Buddhas, numberless as atoms, each amidst a host of Bodhisattvas, and I am confident the sphere of all phenomena is entirely filled with the Buddhas in this way. With infinite oceans of praise for you and ocean of sound from the aspects of my voice, I sing the breathtaking excellence of Buddhas and celebrate all of you going to bliss. Beautiful flowers and regal garlands, sweet scent music, scented oils and parasols, sparkling lights and sublime incense, I offer to you, victorious ones. Fine dress and fragrant perfume, sandalwood powder heaped high as Mount Meru, all wondrous offerings in spectacular array, I offer to you, victorious ones. With transcendent offerings, peerless and vast, with profound admiration for all the Buddhas, with strength of conviction in the Bodhisattva way, I offer and bow down to all victorious ones. Every harmful action I have done with my body, speech, and mind, overwhelmed by attachment, anger, and confusion, all these I openly lay bare before you. I lift up my heart and rejoice in all positive potential of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas' interactions, or of solitary realizers, hearers still, training, and those beyond, and all ordinary beings. You who are the bright lights of world in 10 directions, who have attained a Buddha's omniscience through the stage of awakening, all you who are my guides, please turn the supreme wheel of Dharma. With palms together, I earnestly request you who may actualize parinirvana, please stay with us for eons numberless as atoms of the world for the happiness and well-being of all wanderers in samsara. Whatever slight positive potential I may have created, by paying homage, offering, and acknowledging my faults, rejoicing and requesting that the Buddha stay and teach, I now dedicate all this full awakening. So because everyone knows this verse, we'll use it for the Bodhicitta ceremony. Please kneel on your right knee if you follow the ceremony. So, visualize all the Buddhas, as I said earlier. We have found this human, precious human life now, and met with the Dharma, and the teaching of the Buddha, which teaches that everything is interdependent, and therefore, make a pledge that you will be a sincere follower of the Buddha. So in order to be able to do that, you need first to study the Dharma. And then having studied and listened to the Dharma, you need to reflect and try to critically check where there are contradictions and so forth or not. Which is very important to do, why Buddha has said such and such things. So it is very important to really critically analyze the teaching, and then gaining through that kind of critical analysis, when you find some conviction, then that is the stage of having gained understanding through reflection. And then having done that, you need to familiarize with what you have found convincing to you, what you have felt convinced with in meditation over and over again. And through this, in this way, you should think of making yourself a true follower of the Buddha. So to be a really good and true follower of the Buddha, you have to go through this process of hearing, reflecting, and meditating, and then make this determination to become a Buddha and follow these, repeat this to the Buddha, Dharma, and Supreme Assembly. I take refuge until I'm enlightened. By the accumulations created through generosity and so forth, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So when you say, I take refuge until I'm enlightened, you come across this word, I, and then when you say, by the accumulations I create, you come across it a second time. So of course your body and your mind are not you. You should think that I'm not my body nor my mind, but I am an entity which is designated on the basis of the combination of body and the body and the mind. And then, so when you do this kind of analysis into the ultimate nature of things, even the Buddha does not exist, but with you and the Buddha exist by way of convention, as Chandragupta says. Just as a chariot is designated on the basis of its parts that are put together, likewise a human being is designated on the basis of the psychophysical aggregates. And therefore, Chandragupta says, when you do the sevenfold reasoning, analysis through the sevenfold reasoning, of course the chariot and the self cannot be found, but then in conventional terms, the self or the person exist. So when you think about this I and try to find it within your body and the mind, of course you will not be able to find it, but still you should think that it's not the case that you do not exist at all, but you exist by way of designation and convention. And so on the basis of the body and the mind you exist, and therefore when you say, by the accumulations I create through body speech, through generosity and so forth, may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. So to be inclusive, you should say, not just by the merit, but accumulations to the Buddha. So, sorry. To the Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, I go for refuge until I'm enlightened. Through the accumulations I create through generosity and so forth, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Now, at the end of the third repetition, when you say, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings, you should think that you have the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas as your witness to work for the suffering sentient beings who do not want suffering but want happiness, but they are deprived of happiness. And therefore, by developing this wisdom, understanding the true nature of things, you should think of becoming a Buddha for the benefit of all sentient beings. We are not talking about just one lifetime, but even not one aeon, but we are talking about having this determination until the end of space. To the Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, I take refuge until I'm enlightened. By the accumulations I create through generosity and so forth, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May this precious bodhicitta grow where it has not yet grown, where it has already grown, may it never decline but increase evermore. Today my life has borne fruit. Born into the Buddha family. So come what may, from today, I will not cause any decline to this bodhicitta. As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sufferings of the world. Please sit down.
Can I
So when it comes to tantric practice, you need to overcome this ordinary perception and clinging to yourself as ordinary being. So the mind of a Buddha, which is the wisdom mind, the wisdom body of a Buddha, is something which is free from all kinds of mental constructions and elaborations and reifications and so forth. And therefore, in order to reach that goal, we need to meditate on cultivate a meditation where you have some resemblance to that state or the mind of a Buddha. And so, that Buddha, wisdom mind of a Buddha, must come from a compatible cause. And if that is the case, then the physical form of a Buddha also must come from some compatible cause. And therefore, we talked about earlier. We talked about that the inseparability of the three secrets in a Buddha, in the resultant state when you become a Buddha. And so if in the resultant state you need to attain such an inseparable body, speech, and mind, you need to develop some resemblance to that, even on the path level. And so for that, we have the basis, which is the visualization of ourselves as a deity. It's not that you should think that this body that you have now is a form of a Buddha or a deity, because that's a wrong perception. And therefore, what has to happen is that you have to meditate on emptiness, and from within that meditation on emptiness, you transform into a deity. That is, and so you need to meditate on emptiness, and then dissolve yourself, and then arise from that meditation on emptiness into the deity. And therefore, we can do a practice of taking the three Buddha bodies into the path. So for ourselves to visualize as deities, we need to meditate on emptiness. And that meditation on emptiness, the mind meditating on emptiness, which takes the aspect of emptiness as its object, transforms into the deity. And so, and that serves as the basis for the ultimate wisdom mind of a Buddha in the end. And so in any dharma, in any tantric practice that we do, we always come across this mantra, Om Swabhava Shuddha Sarva Dharma Swabhava Shuddha Swaha. And so that differentiates the Buddhist meditation or tantric practice into... And so there are many aspects of tantric practice which are common to Hinduism as well, such as transference of consciousness and so forth. And so when I was in Argentina one time, I saw in the hotel some painting of Tanga painting, which has... I doubted if it was a Buddhist Tanga painting or not, because on the Tanga, on the body of the image, there were lots of chakras and the channels, energy channels and so forth, and lots of them. So maybe that has come from Nepal or somewhere. And in order to do tantric practice, Without understanding of emptiness, there's no way you can actually do. There's no basis for you to do the ritual, tantric rituals. So without that, without bodhicitta, you will not be able to do the bodhisattva-yana practice, really. So we usually say that tantra has the potential to lead us to enlightenment within one lifetime and in one body. But that is not so easy. So in Tibet, we have had lots of monasteries where they do lots of tantric rituals. But without study of tantra, without understanding the dharma, I mean, the tantric practices don't become so effective. So as concerning myself, I do meditation on emptiness many times a day and also bodhicitta many times a day. So I do my best to also to meditate on emptiness, and then even if it may be just in a state of kind of assumption, I have at this stage I have meditated or visualized myself in transforming into medicine Buddha as. And then in the altar, in the mandala, you can also see the heap of champa, which should be also visualized as the medicine Buddha. Now, in order to go through the transformation, on your crown, meditate the medicine Buddha. On your crown is the sovereign king of the precious wish-fulfilling jewel, the medicine Buddha, the essential nature of who is, which is your spiritual teacher. So on your crown is the king of medicine, physicians, and then on top of it is the medicine Buddha, king of clairvoyance, red in color, body, holding his right hand and bestowing supreme city, and his left hand in the meditation gesture. On top of his crown is a melodious utterance of the ocean of Dharma, body, red in color, holding his right hand, bestowing supreme city, and his left hand in the meditation gesture. And on top of him is a supreme sorrowless glory, the Buddha. And then on top of his crown is the stainless excellent gold, the medicine Buddha. And on his crown is the precious moon. And then on his crown is the excellent name. So these medicine Buddhas are one on top of the other. And so please repeat these lines. So what you're saying is calling on the glorious renown of excellent name, but and making prostration, and then you say, "O Sukha, the excellent name, please bless me and all sentient beings to instantly avail the fruits of your past aspirations, just as you have prayed." Having prayed thus, visualize Tathagata, excellent name, melts into the light and dissolves into the body of the jewel moon, which is the Buddha below him. So these seven Buddhas dissolve one into the other from top down. Then say, "I bow down, make offering, and take refuge in you, O King of melodious sound, completely adorned with jewels, moon, and lotus, the transcendent Bhagavan, Tathagata, Arhat, perfect and fully enlightened one." O Sugata, jewel moon, please bless me and all sentient beings to instantly avail the fruits of your past aspirations, just as you have prayed. So having prayed, thus visualized Tathagata, jewel moon, melts into light and dissolves into the body of the stainless excellent gold. Then next, repeat, I bow down, make offering and take refuge in you, O precious glow of stainless excellent gold, who accomplished ascetic practices, these transcendent Bhagwan, Tathagata, Arahat, and perfect and fully enlightened one. O Sugata, stainless excellent gold, please bless me and all sentient beings to instantly avail the fruits of your past aspirations, just as you have prayed. And then visualize Tathagata, stainless excellent gold, dissolving into the supreme sorrowless glory. And now make prayer to the supreme sorrowless glory. I bow down, make offering, and take refuge in you, O Supreme Sovereign's glory, the transcendent Bhagavan Tathagata Arahat, perfect and fully enlightened one. O Sugata, supremely sovereign's glory, please bless me and all sentient beings to instantly obey the fruits of your past aspirations, just as you have prayed. And this Tathagata, supreme sorrowless glory, dissolves into the melodious utterance of all an ocean of Dharma. And now make prayer to this Buddha. I bow down, make offering, and take refuge in you, O melodious utterance of an ocean of Dharma, the transcendent Bhagavan, Tathagata, Arahat, perfect and fully enlightened one. O Sugata, melodious utterance of an ocean of Dharma, please bless me and all sentient beings to instantly await the fruits of your past aspirations just as you have prayed. So having made this prayer, then the Tathagata, melodious utterance of ocean of Dharma dissolves into the king of clairvoyance, having prayed Chogyi. So I bow down to make offering and take refuge in you, O king of clairvoyance, the transcendent Bhagavan Tathagata Arhat, perfect and truly enlightened one. O Sugata, king of clairvoyance, please bless me, all sentient beings, to instantly avail of the fruits of your past aspirations, just as you have prayed. And so this king of clairvoyance now dissolves into the king of physicians. I bow down, make offering to and take refuge in the Buddha, teacher of medicine, the king of with the radiance of lotus leisurely gem, transcendent Bhagavan, Tathagata, Arhat, perfect and fully enlightened one. O Sugata, king of physicians, please bless me and all sentient beings to instantly avail the fruits of your past aspirations, just as you have prayed. So having prayed thus, visualize that the infinite light and rays of light come forth from the body of the Tathagata, king of medicine, physicians, filling your whole body from the crown to the sole of your feet, purifying all your sicknesses, illness, and obscurations, thereby turning your body like a piece of crystal clear, cleared of corrosion and blemishes. So, of course, from the side of the Buddha, there is the compassion there to benefit us. And then our sickness and impurities and obscurations and so forth come from causes and conditions. And therefore, through certain causes and conditions, these defilements and impurities and so forth, sickness and so forth, can be overcome. And so, so because of our ignorance, we have suffering, and then we have sicknesses and so forth. And therefore, this can be overcome, completely eliminated through the meditation and insight into emptiness, combined with the bodhicitta. So here, we are not talking about purifying of negativities that is on some inanimate object, but we are talking about purifying our mind. So because these impurities have come through causes and conditions, they can be overcome. So we'll not repeat this whole process that we have done. We'll just do it with one. And then the king of physicians melts into light and dissolves into you, thereby you transform into the Buddha, teacher of medicine, whose body is dark blue in color. And so when you think about yourself, from crown down to the sole of your feet, where this I is, if you think, whether in dream state or waking state, or where this I is, if you think about them, this I is merely designated by name, in name, and therefore it does not exist as some kind of a solid entity, autonomous, independently existing. And therefore, on the basis of my body, speech and mind, although I appear to have some kind of a solid, independent, existing I, you should have this conviction that there is no such a self. And with that understanding, then you dissolve into emptiness. And so the aspect of the mind meditating on emptiness transforms into yourself as the Buddha, teacher of medicine. So this Buddha Buddha is dark blue in color, wearing the monastic robes. His right hand is in gesture of bestowing supreme siddhi or accomplishments, holds a fully grown arura medicinal plant in the palm, and his left hand is in meditation gesture, holding a lapis lazuli armed bowl filled with nectar. He's draped in the three silk red silk monastic robes. He sits in the Vajra cross-legged posture on a lotus and moon throne, his body complete with all the marks and the signs of an extraordinary being. At your heart is blue om on a moon disc. So, from the heart of the guru, from the Om syllable at the heart of the guru, rays of light go out, and they invoke the blessings of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and directions, and they dissolve into the Om at your heart. And so your body, speech, and mind on the crown, throat, and heart are marked with Om, Ah, and Hum syllables, representing the body, speech, and mind. And then the flower is touched on your crown. So please repeat this mantra of Medicine Buddha. So this chains of mantra comes from the guru's heart and comes down into your mouth and enters your mouth and are placed at your heart. And so repeat this three times. Namo Bhagavate Guru Bengaje Guru Benduya Rampa Ranjaya Tathagataya Arahate Samyasam Buddhaya Deyatha Om Bengaje Bengaje Ma Bengaje Raja Samangadiye Soha. The text itself doesn't give Raja, but it comes out from my mouth. Please repeat it again. Om Namo Bhagavate Guru Benduya Prabha Ranjaya Tathagataya Arahate Samyasam Buddhaya Deyatha Om Begadze Begadze Ma Begadze Raja Samangadiya Soha. The Guru's mantra dissolves within your mantra at the heart, and then Namo Bhagavate Tathagataya Arahate Samyasam Buddhaya, Deyatha, Om Begadze, Begadze, Ma Begadze, Raja Samangadiye Soha. So the mantra at your heart is stabilized. Please repeat this also. Master, please think of me from now on until I reach the essence of enlightenment. I'll take the Buddha of medicine as my meditation deity. So this is not supposed to be used for repetition. Master, please say your name. I, known by this name, from now until enlightenment, and I reached enlightenment, I'll take Buddha medicine, medicine Buddha, as my meditational deity, and recite his mantra, whatever number I can, on a daily basis. Whatever number I can recite on a daily basis, I will do so. Whatever number I can recite his mantra on a daily basis, I will do so. So this completes the text, the transmission. So His Holiness is giving the oral transmission of the text that is distributed in Tibetan. It's not in English. I'm sorry. So this was composed by His Holiness at the request of Gerong Kensur from Serame Monastery. And so the quality, the unique quality of the Buddha is that he taught the dependent origination, as Master Tsongkhapa also praised him. So there's homage to the Buddha Shakyamuni, and then the seven medicine Buddhas, and then to the homage to the Dharma, and also the Sangha. So the text goes through the seven limb offering, which are paying homage, making offerings, just confessing misdeeds, and so on. And then says, may the aspirations, my aspirations, be fulfilled. I and others are the same, equal in the sense of wanting happiness and not wanting suffering, but we do not know the cause of suffering, and we always run after the causes of suffering. And so seeing this condition of us, please pacify the misfortunes at this degenerate age of us, ours. Then, next, yesterday, Baba Punzo Wangil had passed away. I received the message yesterday. So he was somebody I knew since 1951 or 1952. And he's a Tibetan hero. He was a Tibetan hero, and I had time been with acquainted with him for a long time. I don't want to go into details. He was a Marxist, philosophically. And then, while being a Marxist, he was had a very strong spirit of being Tibetan. And because of that strong Tibetan spirit, he was imprisoned later. And so, including him, many of the Tibetan Tibetan Marxists I knew were imprisoned around 1957. They were dismissed from their offices, and then some of them were even kept in house arrest. And so, this Mr. Punzo Wangil was someone who was really sincere and dedicated for the Tibetan people. He didn't have religious faith. But he had a very strong feeling of being Tibetan. the spirit of Tibetan. As an example of that, one day when I was where I met Mao Zedong many times, and other Indian, other Chinese officials and leaders. So Punzo Wangil was my interpreter. So one day when we were talking, he said to me, looking at me, "You, your presence, I had, I saw you in Nobilinka many years ago. You were very small on a throne, but today you here grown so big." And then he loudly cried. So I felt a bit embarrassed. So he had a very strong Tibetan spirit. Maybe he also had some kind of a feeling of faith or something. So in the earlier part of his life, he was a communist without any religious faith. But yes, last year he sent me a photo of himself from Beijing. And he became a Buddhist in the end, holding a scarf in his hands and then touching his hands to his forehead. So there are many, many Chinese and Tibetans officials, communist officials, externally, but internally they were they are Buddhists. So in Mongolia also there was such a situation. Many of the Mongolian officials and soldiers, when they met me individually, alone, then they took off their hats and took blessing from me. Whereas in public and when they are in front of other officials, they would pretend not to be religious. So there's when there's so much fear in the system, you have to be hypocritic. So the whole blame goes to Lenin for total control. Mao Zedong was in the beginning very sincere communist, and Liu Taoji and others were really comrades. So they were only thinking about the masses, the public. But later, gradually, they became drunk with the power and authority. And so, Punzo Wangil was a communist from Ba region of Tibet, including him. There were many of the people from Ba region of Tibet. So they really were dedicated themselves for the Tibetan people. And there were some from Amdo region. There was one person named Dashi Tushi. He was, of course, born in Ganze region of Tibet, but later on lived in Amdo. I knew him well, very good person. And then Yang Lin Dorji is still alive. I had this wish to be able to meet with Punzo Wangil. So when I was in Buenos Aires, one time, Punzo Wangil called me, and I asked him what happened to socialism now, and he just laughed. So we'll say for him, the late Baba Punzo Wangil, let's say prayers, and also for those who have struggled and died also for the Tibetan cause, Tibetan people, so people including those who self-immolated themselves, and then those who are sick and are under difficult circumstances, let's say prayer to them, for them all. We have nothing else to do other than this. We cannot do much. So let us recite the Om Mani Padme Hum mantra. Om Mani, please repeat. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Please say this mantra. Om Mani Padme Hum. One round of mala. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om Mani Padme Hum.
Om Mani Padme
Hum. May all sentient beings, my parents, have happiness, and may all the lower realms of existence be emptied. And may all the prayers of the Bodhisattvas be fulfilled without hindrance. So, keep in mind what I taught earlier, and then the students, you could also have discussions amongst yourselves about what I said, and don't just leave it, don't just think that you have received some teaching, and which has not made any sense to you, but just take that this session to be to have taken a class with me. The path that combines emptiness and compassion grow clearer and clearer. Lord of the teachings and beings in the snow land of Tibet, to you, the lotus holder, Tenzin Gyatso, I pray. May all your wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. So this prayer is repeated. You make the path that combines emptiness and compassion grow clearer and clearer. Lord of the teachings and the beings in the land of snow, Tibet. To you, the lotus holder, Tenzin Gyatso, I pray. May all your wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. You make the path that combines emptiness and compassion grow clearer and clearer. Lord of the teachings and beings in the snowy land of Tibet, to you, the lotus holder, Tenzin Gyatso, I pray. May all your wishes be fulfilled spontaneously.
Chanan bemun de denja de la zoan de zo janan de la duni ninja zonda jivana jeje de denga. De denja de la zoan de zo janan de zo duni ninja zonda jivana jeje de denga jenden. Zoan de zo janan de zo duni ninja zonda jivana jeje de denga jen. Chanan bemun de denja de la zoan de zo jendon lundo jo yedan gura lena medar niyan ayan min teme yun denja de benga jen yun jon dula mudin tuzun de jesun ala mudin da yedin ben meman di gonca sujin oze yun zandı zanı yun ben pendin bedojin din zengen amcı ben yuvanı jujun amcı cavan Miselingin dobu yunum yamamin dügen ayın yanar nüzü gönlüm bu gece
Samjong-e-men-ju-ba-ma-le-wa-jo-son-de-men-de-shu-ju-ju.